for the next 4 weeks, so I've already suggested we have a little mini series. We'll be hearing the stories of the first Christians. Oh, and by the way, the name of the sermon didn't make it into the bulletin. I didn't have a title for it yet, but the title is The One Thing They Can Agree On. The one thing we can agree on. I can't even agree for myself. For the next 4 weeks, we're going to be hearing the stories of the first Christians. And it's so early in the story of Christianity that they're not even called Christians yet. They don't even use that understanding of themselves. They're still Jewish. Still a community of Jewish people in this story, although that's going to definitely change as we progress through the book of Acts over these next 4 weeks. They're just called the people of the way, or the followers of Jesus, and they're in this wild space of transition from being centered around a living teacher, their teacher Jesus, to being a community without their primary teacher and guide at the center. And so the question for them is, how does a charismatic movement continue without its charismatic leader? The book of Acts is starting to answer that question. And the book of Acts, as I'm sure many of you know, is a sequel. It's got the same author as the Gospel of Luke. I took I went to a Mennonite college, and I took a Luke Acts course, and my professor, who I think is still teaching there, she sometimes confessed that she would be a little bit annoyed that the Gospel of John would be in the Bible interrupting the continuity between Luke and Acts. And I get it. I'm not totally sure why the Bible is organized exactly the way it is, because it's not quite chronological. Anyway, that's not a question that I need to answer today. They're divided up, but they are together. Luke and Acts are a series of books. And last week I confessed about my love for happy endings in literature. I do read a lot, and I love a happy ending. I also love a series. I love a book that has a sequel, and there for it. And I know that there are others among us who also love series. I asked Phoebe this morning what her favorite series was, and she said The Babysitter's Club. And so many good young adult series. I know Lene probably could name a bunch. Dog Man is one that's Ori's favorite, and that I can also recommend. So I wouldn't be surprised that each of you might have a favorite series. Also, I love a mystery series, personally. Louise Penny is one of my favorites. So that's essentially what Luke is doing here. He's following characters, which is why we love series. You get to follow characters from one book into another and see what happens in their lives, what happens as the story develops. And that's what Luke is doing with Acts. Because we spend some time with these same characters. And because we're going to be in Acts for a few weeks, I'm going to offer a little bit of context before I, like, really get going. Acts is the only book of its kind in the Bible. There are, of course, other, you know, the epistles have some of the same authors. But it's the only book that's a narrative of what happens with those first disciples of Jesus, those first followers of Christ. It was written in the 80s or 90s. So when we were talking about Mark before these last many weeks we've been talking about the Gospel of Mark, that was a few decades ago already. And we've just finished... Oh, where am I? The other thing about the Acts, even though it's a sequel, the people who are the followers of Jesus, this early church, they've had the Gospel of Luke in hand for a little while. So one commenter that I was listening to this week was like, well, it's like they've been binging a series. They've watched the whole series, and now they're wondering, okay, what happens next? They've had to wait. And now we have Acts, that's like the second installment in this story. So they've had other gospels circulating, but this is the first time that there's like a whole account. And Luke starts it off with a little bit of a recap, just like you see at the beginning of a TV series. Okay, like here's what's happened. Here's what happened in the last story. Although, because we've been in Mark, not in Luke, it's a little bit odd because we didn't get the recap part in Mark. We stopped with the women running away terrified, and some other people added some endings. But here we have Luke offering us that reassurance. It all turned out okay. Luke is talking to Theophilus, which might be a real person, but it means God lover. Theophilus just means lover of God. So it could just be Luke saying, dear reader, sort of, you know, like, dear lover of God, here is what happened in the gospel, in the story of Jesus. I will probably be using the commentary by a scholar named Willie James Jennings a lot in these few weeks. And he is a professor of theology and Africana studies at Yale. And he very much reads the book of Luke and Acts through his position as a black man in America. And I really appreciate the way he writes about it. And one of the things he says, and I think he's right, is that even though we get to, introduced to a lot of these early characters in Acts, the main character of Acts is the Holy Spirit. Because that is who is moving throughout this book and making things happen. Except in the passage that we read today, no Holy Spirit. So we just sort of have the prologue in the passage that Linnea read for us. And it's in, some of you have Bibles open, but today it's in the insert if you want to take a look at it for yourselves. So we don't quite have the Holy Spirit yet. And Luke is just sort of summing up, this is what happened in my last account. You already know what happened with Jesus. He's been around. He's been appearing to some disciples. And yada, 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 we get all of that. And while I don't mean to yada, yada the resurrection, we do jump forward now a few days to this little band of folks who are listening to the last words of their teacher, their beloved guy, still wondering, is now the time? Is now the time that you're going to restore the political power of Israel? And we did get a bit of this in Mark, and I think I overheard Sunday School talking about it this morning also. These disciples are still wondering about a political kingdom. They're still wondering, is it now? But now, could we finally get it now? And in this final scene with Jesus, once again, he sets them on the right course and basically says again, stop it. What's happening right now, and has already, frankly, already started, is you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, in Judea, in Samaria, and all across the earth. Jennings' contention about the book of Acts, what he says about the book of Acts, and I have to agree with him again, is that the book of Acts is disentangling the idea of nationalism, of national identity, from the mission of God. Taking those two things apart. God's reign covers all people, all nations, and Jesus is giving his instructions now, his final instructions, to proclaim that message. You'll start right here, and like ripples in water, the good news will spread. And I picture, like when he uses those names of places, I can almost picture on a map kind of the ripples spreading out and out and out and out from Jerusalem. And when the disciples heard this, they must have been baffled. They've always had Jesus to lead them to the next place and to the next place and to the next place. That was happening already in Jesus' ministry, starting in Galilee and getting bigger and getting bigger and getting bigger. So no wonder they stand there just like looking up at heaven, at Jesus' feet disappearing into the clouds. I love this picture that's on the front. This is by Joseph on the front of the bulletin. And there's just like some Jesus' feet dangling down from the clouds. And you can see the footprints on the ground. And the disciples just like staring up into heaven. They've always had Jesus to lead them. And now it's baffling. No wonder they're confused. And they didn't follow the instructions immediately. They had to have two angels again appear to them and say, like, move, get going. But it's confusing still because the Holy Spirit hasn't yet come. And they don't know who are we? What are we going to do? They have no strategy. They have no plan. They have no identified leadership. They have to fill Judas's place among the 12. That's the next thing that happens in the story. And crucially, they haven't yet received the Holy Spirit. But they can agree on this one thing. They can agree on one thing. We are going to be unified in prayer. They know that through prayer, they can access the Holy Spirit. They can work together to discern. Through prayer, they can decide who is our next leader going to be, who are we going to be calling and sending. And it's no small thing to find this unity together, I wouldn't think. So consider how Jennings describes this group. He says, God gathers not according to our wishes, but through holy desire for those who desire the holy. Thus we have here an interesting group, Mary and her children, the disciples who walked with Jesus, and certain women, 120 people that could not be confused with a clan, a class, or family, extended or nuclear. They prepare for an unknown future, aware of a troubled past. A couple of things stand out to me about that. One, the holy desire for those who desire the holy. I just love that. And also his description, we have 120 people who aren't a family, they aren't a class, they're all different from each other. And I thought, well, that sounds a lot like a church. Sounds like a church to me. And yet they express through their prayers, though they have no reason other than Jesus to unite them, they express through their prayers their unity as they await the Spirit to call them. There are a lot of pressures on us as individuals and as communities to unite around things that are not holy, to call our desire from things that are holy to things that are unholy, even though many of them act like they are holy. Sports affiliations are one of those things. I know we have many sports fans in this congregation. And I do not believe that any of you are allowing your sports affiliations or fandoms to get in the way of your fandom to Jesus. But it's real. I know as a youth pastor, I really struggled with Sunday morning soccer. It was a real struggle, or with people who wanted to see the football game. Those fandoms are powerful forces, both sports and any other of the many things in our universes, whether that's TV or movie franchises or sports or pop icons. I really, really like the new Beyonce album, and like the Beehive is a thing. Now, again, I'm not really worried about any of us with these. But one that is worrying in this nation, though maybe, again, not among us, is Christian nationalism. Still, even those first Christians who were struggling under empire, under Rome, who was calling for absolute allegiance, and even now, in this cult of American nationalism, and it's not only in America, it's happening in other countries too, though maybe not to the same extent, but anyone who has seen the Trump Bible knows that American nationalism is very, very wrapped up in the clothing of Christianity. Very entangled. And I'm quoting Jennings again here. Nationalism remains a powerful way of imagining life together because it is a theological vision that mimics the desire for God, for our full communion with each other. It is communion without God. Or God simply used as a slogan. It places God bound to nation over God of all nations, and it wants our worship. Now, again, I'm not particularly concerned about this congregation succumbing to that kind of a unifying force, but I do think it's a concern in the Mennonite church writ large. I do think there is some worry about that. But I hope that even though in the Mennonite church and here among us, even though we are not identical, we aren't a uniformity, we're not even unanimous. we can find unity around our central understandings of what Jesus is calling us to, particularly, I think, in the Mennonite church, around our calling to be peacemakers. I don't quite yet feel like I have been at Evergreen long enough that I've experienced any kind of challenge to our unity as a congregation, personally. But I am still, like, I'm still feeling out, what are the things that unite us? What are the understandings or ideas or commitments that unite us as a congregation? Different than, again, different than unanimity, different than being uniform. Where do we experience unity? Where do we or have we experienced unity? One of the examples that I thought of that was just before I arrived was the unity that we expressed as a congregation around welcome of LGBTQ people, around expressing that. And then I was really proud to be part of expressing that in a welcome statement. I mean, when that was read, I still feel a little bit emotional now about how proud I feel to be a part of that commitment to welcome. That feels like a unifying example. So in the next few minutes, I invite you to think for yourself, where in your time with this community, whether that's been a short time or decades, when have you experienced unity? So for about 2 minutes, I'm going to play some music and invite you all to reflect silently. And you can use your bulletin to write notes. I know, Linda, you're so good at just writing notes all the time. There's some pencils up here if that's something that would be helpful to you. Or you can just think silently, and you have some prompts in your bulletin to use if you want to do that. So, and then after those couple minutes are up, I'm going to invite you to turn to someone near you, preferably not someone in your household or family. And if you are a child, you can decide whether you want to talk to someone who's in your family or not in your family. And compare your ideas and what unifies, what have you reflected, like what have you noticed together? And then lastly, we'll get a few ideas from the larger group and see what we hear. So first, I'm not sure if my phone will continue recording if I play music. We're going to see what happens. First, let's reflect together while we hear some music. Nope, it seems like it won't. So I'm going to stop recording and then I'll play some music.